Tom Morris from Fox Footy is on the line. Welcome to you, Tom. Great to have you on.
Dwayne, very good to speak to you. I was just going to say back to that caller, you've got the World Series in baseball, you've got the World Champions in the NFL, which is the Super Bowl, so I don't take it too seriously.
Nice work. By the way, Tom, are you part of... I've got to give a plug here. Catch Richmond v Geelong live, ad-free, siren to siren on Fox Footy tonight. And you can catch Tom with David King, Lee Montagna on first crack as well, Sunday night after Bounce. So there's the plug. I've got to pay to get you on these days. Tom, great to have you on, by the way, to talk a bit of breaking news, because I want to play you firstly the news that's making some pretty big headlines around the footy states right now, given what Matt Rendell had to say earlier on today about Ned Guy's football watching. Here's Matt Rendell on SENSA.
No, it wasn't surprising. I haven't spoken to anyone about it or anyone at Collingwood, but, you know, it was a disaster, not of all his own making, the last trade period. You know, that was a list management monumental stuff up, not only over 1 year, but 2 or 3 years. Everyone has to take responsibility for that after list management. He was trying to manage the outcome best he could. He didn't have many cards to deal with because everyone knew it was a fire sale. Ned's background is in finance, and I think that's why they got him in to try and fix the TPP. It didn't quite work out that way. My experience was that he didn't watch much footy. And right. Look, people are coming into the club in recruiting, list management. You have to love watching all sorts of footy. I know you're like me, Kane. You know, yeah. I watch AFL, VFL. I watch women's under-18s. I'll go to the local clubs and watch them play. Like any greater football, I'll go and watch. I don't think Ned was that keen on watching a lot of footy. And I thought, so from that point of view, I thought it was a really poor appointment by Jeff Walsh, to tell the truth. And no surprise, it's ended up like it's ended up. The biggest problem for Collingwood is they've got one recruiter there, Derek Hine, still doing all the heavy lifting.
Couple of big whacks there from Matt Rendell. You've been following the story for a few days, Tom. In fact, you broke a couple of pieces of it. It's been an interesting one.
Oh, very interesting, Dwayne. I mean, where do we want to start? I think Matt Rendell started out pretty well there, talking about Ned Guy and how, you know, it's not only his fault. I think that's pretty clear cut. Clearly, the list manager has to have a significant responsibility over what happened in that trade period. But I think this is an entire club issue that's been festering for quite some time. Ned Guy, to say that he's got a finance background, it sort of gives this idea that he's just like a banker sitting at a desk crunching numbers. I think that's a bit unfair on Ned Guy. I mean, he was a very accomplished player manager. He was a very accomplished amateur footballer himself, which isn't a prerequisite, but it helps clearly because he's played the game to a reasonable level at A-grade VAFA level. And he was quite personable and easy to get along with. So I don't think his communication was that bad, but I think he just got caught up in a storm that was probably partly his doing, but also I think largely others doing. And it just created this situation where he just couldn't get out. And given that he was the front man in a trade period where the club was trying to offload these players, he had to be a good communicator to sell the message. And if he wasn't, then it had to be Nathan Buckley. And if it wasn't Buckley, it had to be someone else. And in the end, they couldn't find anyone that could spin it enough so that we could all believe it. And it became a complete unmitigated disaster. So I can see what Matt Rendell's saying, absolutely. And I agree with elements of it. But I'm not too harsh on Ned Guy. I think there's other people involved that deserve maybe just as much criticism as Ned Guy. And I think he would have done things differently if he had his time again. But also, I think he was caught in a storm and it was very hard to get out of.
So is this the end of the storm or just the start of the storm at Collingwood?
No, I think we're in the middle of it now, Dwayne. I think there's more to come. You know, what that entails, we'll have to wait and see, whether it's the senior coach, whether it's assistant coaches. They've only got one full-time recruiter at the club, I saw the other day. I think Matt Rendell said that as well. So my view of Collingwood is the same as Lee Montagna's. They're on the way down. If you think of someone, a club at ground zero, North Melbourne at the moment, they're at ground zero. They're not going to get any worse, I wouldn't have thought. You know, Adelaide, the first half of last year, ground zero. You know, Melbourne, when Mark Neild was sacked a few years ago, they were at ground zero. I still feel like Collingwood have a few rungs to go down before they come up again, and that's a really ominous position to be in. And they've resisted using the word rebuild to this point, but it's clear that's exactly what they need to do. So I think there's going to be some more issues at the club in terms of, you know, changes to football department staff, certainly the playing list. will get a looking over at the end of the year. Players like Levi Greenwood and Chris Mayne, I'd be surprised if they were there next year just because they're the wrong age bracket. And then they've got to trade some out to try to get some points back and some draft picks in. And the three players I'm really interested in, Dwayne, are Jordan Ngoi and Darcy Moore and Braden Maynard. Now, they're all out of contract at the end of next year. So at the moment, at the end of this year, they're what we call pre-agents. And pre-agents, a year before they become free agents, normally benefits the player. I mean, Danaher from the Essendon Footy Club was a pre-agent when he tried to get out. He couldn't do it. I just wonder whether it's in Collingwood's best interest. I wouldn't be getting rid of Darcy Moore. But to trade a Jordan Ngoi or a Braden Maynard, see what you can get for them, and then rebuild at the draft. But it's a long way home for the football club and for the fans. I will say that if you're a list manager going into Collingwood Football Club, you've got a pretty good clean slate, though, because you've got 3 or 4 years to have a proper crack at it and start again. The issue for Collingwood and their fans is they're not used to going down the bottom for any length of time. So there's a few elements at play here, but I certainly think there's more to play out, to answer your question.
You don't know who's going to get the gig?
No, I've got no idea. I mean, Graham Wright will do it in the short term. He could conceivably do both. I mean, it's not completely unusual to have someone doing both. Jason McCartney does both at GWS. I think with a soft cap that's been reduced, that will become a more attractive proposition. Graham Wright is a very accomplished football person. But I wonder whether they're going to target someone from another club if they want someone to do list management. You know, do they go after Stephen Wells, who whose future has been a bit cloudy at Geelong recently? That would be an interesting one. You know, does he want to do it? Do they go after someone else? I mean, like Jimmy Bartel's done a lot of list management stuff at GWS as a director on the board. Do they want him to be in a full-time role? So there's so many around the league who would be qualified. It's just what they want for that role. You know, do they want a good communicator? Do they want a numbers man? Do they want a bit of both? Do they want more of a recruiter? I mean, each club does it differently. So it's whatever Mark Anderson and Graham Wright think is correct.
You wrote the story on the Fox Sports website yesterday that the Swans had all tested negative after isolating and they're okay to play. Do you know what the latest is going to be as to whether their assistants are going to be able to talk on Zoom or on phones or be involved or what they might do?
The AFL is still working through this, Dwayne, with the Sydney Swans. And Tom Harley spoke this morning. I mean, it's a really interesting one because common sense would say, of course, you should be allowing the assistants in Sydney to do this. But there's this whole issue of integrity in the game. And we learned about it with Jordan Ngoi and Jeremy Howe recently with the phones. You know, how many phones, how many screens can you have? And also, how much is distracting for the players? I mean, there's sort of a logistical side of it as well. I don't know how you'd go, Dwayne, at quarter time if someone's holding up an iPad telling you how to play from a few thousand kilometres away. It's a really interesting proposition. But the other thing is, the Sydney Swans have the most skeleton staff of all football departments in the league this year. You know, most football departments have cut their staff to a point, but still have, you know, 7, 8, 9 assistant and development coaches. But the Sydney Swans have, you know, 5, and 3 of them can't be there. So this couldn't have happened to a worse club in terms of the way they're structured up, you know. And they've got John Longmire sitting there alongside Ben Matthews and another assistant coach in the coaches box. I assume Tom Harley will help and Charlie Gardner, but it's not going to be the same. And I'm intrigued to see how it's going to play out and whether it actually affects the players or not.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if they change it around to the point that Brett Kirk doesn't run or is trying to make it seem as if there's no change, the best thing for the players, so you keep your runner as your runner. But it's going to be interesting that the AFL is still working through it, as you said, so we don't have a resolution yet. You also wrote a story about Taylor Harris's future with Carlton in the AFLW and what's going to happen on the overall money landscape. And I noticed that Eddie mentioned on Footy Classified she might have a world championship fight on her horizon as well.
Yeah, well, I'm not across the boxing side of it other than what Eddie said on Footy Classified. But this is the reality right now for Taylor Harris and Carlton. Carlton don't really want Taylor Harris to stay, especially on the money that she's been on. And to this point, there's been no real other interest from other clubs. And it's a remarkable fall from grace from someone who is such an iconic figure in the game. You know, not just for the way she's played in the past, but, you know, the stance she took and the fact she's got a statue, which is all slightly separate to the way she played, but it's connected as well. So people tell me that Taylor Harris and Carlton have some serious issues to work through. You know, Taylor Harris isn't the most popular teammate at the moment. She left training early to post an Instagram photo, didn't tell anyone. That sort of thing, you know, where she's prioritising different aspects of her life above football, didn't endear her to her teammates. And then the club probably hasn't developed Taylor as much as Taylor would like to be developed. So this is not irretrievable. You know, the two can get back together and have a good year next year in AFLW, but it's going to take a lot of work from both parties. And if it doesn't work out, which is the sense that I think it won't work out, then another club will have to come calling and they might not want to pay that money. So Taylor Harris's career is flashing before our eyes. If no club wants her, then where is she going to go next and how much are they going to pay her? And it's a question that at the moment is very much open.
Campbell Brown's about to join me, Tom, to talk some footy, so I better get to Campbell. But quickly, the Australians in India that were playing in the IPL and competing in the IPL, they're about to get home, I understand?
Well, they're in the Maldives now, so they've been transported there. They're I guess, in a high-quality isolation resort, for lack of a better term. Michael Hussey is still in India. I spoke to him the other day. Yesterday, in fact, I texted him to see if he's okay. He tested positive. He said he's going fine, just mild symptoms, which is good news. But certainly all the Australians that have travelled from the IPL to the Maldives are hoping to get home soon, but they also don't want to be treated any differently to any other Australian citizen. So it's a delicate issue for everyone, but probably the most important thing is that Michael Hussey is okay, even though he has tested positive. And I think that sort of makes everything else seem relatively insignificant, given we know how dangerous this virus can be, especially when it's a strain like they've had in India in recent times.
Great to have you, Tom. Love your work on First Crack, by the way. Sundays after Bounce on Fox Footy with David King and Lee Montagna. I don't agree with the captain's challenge thing that Lee Montagna pulled that hanky out of his pocket last week. But it is a great show, Tom. Keep on keeping on. I'll see you at the office this weekend.
Look forward to it, Dwayne. Chat then. See ya.
Tom Morris from Fox Footy, Fox Footy's senior reporter. We'll take a break. Campbell Brown, not far away.